Case number 13-5090, Catholic Healthcare West Appellant versus Kathleen Sebelius in her official capacity as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Mr. Lebecki for the appellant, Mr. Hoskins for the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is, may it please the court, my name is Jeffrey Levitke, and I'm here representing the appellant in this case. The Secretary's regulations state that fair market value will usually be based on sales of comparable items at a market price. But in this case, the Secretary's final decision stated that only a cost methodology may be considered in determining whether or not fair market value exists. And as a result, the Secretary completely ignored relevant evidence in the administrative record pertaining to alternative valuation methodologies based upon the income and the market approaches.
And counsel, the one part of the decision under review, the Secretary relies on, uses cost, to be sure, which you object to, for a calculation showing that essentially there wasn't enough consideration to make this say an arm's length transaction. But suppose we agree with you that it was improper to consider cost, or we prefer not to get into that, and we substitute the figures from the appraisal you had done, your client had done, we substitute the figures, the so-called market approach and the income approach, we use those in that calculation, don't we come up with essentially the same result?
Well, Your Honor, the appraiser came up with a $36 million appraised value overall. That was the amount of the appraised value. Actually, it was $35 million, Your Honor, that the appraiser...
Well, I'm looking at the 281 of the Joint Appendix. There are three figures, the cost, market, and income.
Right. Well, at 281 of the Joint Appendix, Your Honor, the appraiser came up with a $28 million valuation.
Right.
Which would have actually been in the hospital's favor because the consideration paid was originally estimated to be $36 million. And
that's in the form of assumption of liability.
Well, it's still consideration, though,
right,
Your Honor.
Right.
And then it was reduced to $32 million. So that would mean that the appellant overpaid, not underpaid, but overpaid.
Don't we have to put back in the cash and cash equivalents on hand, which appear to have been removed in the calculation presented at page 281?
Well, Your Honor, the conclusion of the appraiser here was that the fair market value of the hospital overall was $30 million, including working capital. And the working capital accounts refer to the cash accounts. And that's at page JA-282. We therefore conclude that the market value of the subject hospital, including working capital, is $30 million. And then he added in...
Does that make any sense in light of the calculations at page 281?
Your Honor, good point.
I mean, how do you take those numbers and average them out, or make an estimate that takes into account all three figures, and come up with that number, including the working capital?
I can't, Your Honor.
So, at least one possibility that seems very of high probability is that we have a typo.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure if that's the case. I don't know. But what I can say is that in the Secretary's final decision, she did not have a word of criticism about this point.
The Secretary goes on the cost theory.
Right.
I agree on that.
Right. And I can't explain, Your Honor, how that occurred. But if the Secretary was unhappy with the appraisal or the intermediary was unhappy with the appraisal, they could have just gone out and gotten a different appraisal. And they should have gotten a different appraisal because the regulations in this case expressly contemplate that the allocations of value to individual asset items will be based on an independent appraisal.
But isn't it your burden to make the showing that you're entitled to an alteration from the reigning depreciation based on the historical value
right.
or the net book value?
Right. And based on the $30 million, we've met that burden. If there are other deficiencies, if that's in fact correct, if there are other deficiencies in the appraisal, they were not even addressed in the final decision of the agency, and it's not our burden to address things that weren't addressed given the administrative nature of this review. We don't have to go into areas that the Secretary did not go into in reaching her final decision.
And the cost ground, you say, is inconsistent with the regulation because the regulation says that usually the market value shall be used, but that does say usually.
Right.
And the program memorandum says, well, you know, nonprofits present a different case. The dynamics are different. The profit-seeking motive is not dominant. So the Secretary explains, we won't use that. This will be one of the unusual cases, this subset of issues. And that is something to which we owe deference and have in the past shown deference, no?
Right. And I have no problem, Your Honor, with the Secretary considering cost. That's perfectly appropriate. But she can't consider cost to the exclusion of other material evidence in the administrative record. And in this case, the Secretary did just that and did not consider the alternative valuation methodologies. She simply completely ignored them because she found in her final decision, she stated that cost is the only appropriate method under the program memorandum. That was her mindset. And if you look at the government's briefs in the district court, they say very clearly that the plain language of the regulations compels a conclusion that only the cost approach may be used, and that's at JA 370. In fair disclosure to the government, they also say in a different brief to the district court that the PM does not require the use of a cost approach, and that's at JA 460 at footnote 22. They can't make up their mind, essentially, which it is, whether it's a discretionary, whether or not the language of the regulations compels the use of a cost approach, or whether, in fact, the Secretary has the discretion to consider alternative valuation methodologies. I would also like to ask the Court to accept the proposition that it is fundamentally irrelevant whether the Marion Hospital...
I'm sorry. Maybe a dead horse. In your opening brief, you did not object to the aspect of the calculation at page 27 of the Joint Appendix that involves essentially reading page 281 of the Joint Appendix as prevailing over page 282. That is, say, the treatment of working capital, right? Address that in your reply brief, but you don't object. You never entertain the possibility that even if the Secretary had followed your view as to relying on market or income analysis, the finding of essentially insufficient evidence of arm's length transaction would be valid.
We are at page 27. The Secretary doesn't even address the working capital issue.
Well, it's implicit in it. isn't it?
Oh, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think it's quite to the contrary.
It starts with the $51 million. That's based on cost from page 201. And then it goes up to a fair market value of 67. I think the only possible route of doing that is by, as I say, having 281 trump 282.
Well, we don't disagree with the numbers necessarily in 27. We disagree with the cost methodology. But we don't disagree.
But what I'm saying is, forget about cost methodology. Do it the way you want it.
Right.
You still, unless there is some sort of error in the treatment of cash and cash equivalents at page 281 of your appraisal, then there's still an extraordinary discrepancy between the value and what was paid.
No, the appraiser did not set out to do a separate valuation of working capital.
I understand.
He said that the normative value of working capital would be $10 million, and that is the amount he used. He did not go through the books of the hospital to examine the $15.6 million figure. And by the way, Your Honor,
the $15 million is not in dispute.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it is somewhat, to be honest with you, Your Honor, because that $15 million, $13 million of it is accounts receivables. And in the hospital industry, accounts receivables are notoriously unreliable, as noted in UMPC Braddock of the Third Circuit. Accounts receivables are a notoriously unreliable measure of the true. It's very unlikely in the hospital industry they'll collect dollar from dollar.
I take your point on that.
Right.
On the other hand, that was nowhere put before us. Right.
Your Honor, no further questions.
Reserve the rest for rebuttal.
I reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Hoskins for Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services. This case is about payment for depreciation. Secretary reasonably found that there was not an arm's length transaction and therefore there was no bona fide sale, which would result in the revaluation of the depreciable assets. The hospital did not put its assets on the open market. It did not even conduct the appraisal until finished the appraisal until 2 years after the fact. And the whole purpose of the regulation is to get a market, if you have a market value of the assets, where parties bargaining at arm's length in their own interest get a better value than the depreciation schedule. Nothing remotely close to that happened here.
Are you saying that the Secretary's actual decision in this case provides an analysis, independent analysis, that justifies exclusive focus on cost?
I would say the Secretary offers.
It relies on the PM, doesn't it?
Yes, the Secretary followed that. The reason.
And the PM is an interpretation of the regulation, right?
Yes.
And it's not only an interpretation, but a change in interpretation. Right.
Wouldn't know that. I'd say it's a change.
Well, certainly, sure, it certainly goes into completely new territory.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that would suggest that under Alaska Professional Hunters, no common rulemaking was needed.
I think this court addressed that argument in both St. Luke's and Forsyth.
It didn't seem to me. I read those carefully. It didn't seem to me that either of those decisions required a addressing this issue. In one of them, I think it's St. Luke's, they point out there wasn't any appraisal at all.
That is correct.
You hardly need to get into the nuances of the PM in that context.
Well, the argument was made that the requiring a bona fide sale at all was a change in the regulation. And that the argument there was primarily the Secretary just when that position had been whenever there was a merger, that the Secretary would automatically revalue the assets based on whatever the purported consideration was. And this court held that, there's to be clear, there was no evidence the Secretary had ever taken that position, and that position has been rejected by every court that has considered the issue.
Yeah, but you hardly needed the PM to get to the result.
Oh, no, I think the Secretary
didn't do it at all in St. Luke's, and your reliance on it in Forsyth is remote.
To be clear, the program memorandum in question is really an instruction to the fiscal intermediaries, the Secretary's contractors, as to how the Secretary is interpreting the regulation. The Secretary absolutely could have reached the exact same result in this adjudication or the one in St. Luke's or Forsyth's.
Yeah, you say the Secretary could have, but the normal sort of scheme of things is that it must be a justification. The justification is in a guidance, or whatever you want to call it, the PM, an unreviewable emanation from the Secretary, then it has to be bolstered in the actual decision that comes before the court. In the words of Yale professor, pay me now or pay me later.
Well, I think it would be a little bit difficult for this. I mean, to be clear, there's no prior contrary interpretation as to how to go about evaluating whether or not a bona fide sale occurred after a merger or consolidation of nonprofit entities. The program memorandum is the first time the Secretary had ever addressed this interpretive question at all. The program memorandum is
that involves segregating the for-profits, the not-for-profit,
yep,
from the for-profit. So that itself was an innovation not inherent in the regulation.
Well, the program memorandum was instructions to the Medicare contractors as to how to evaluate this sort of transaction when it comes up. I mean, I think it's very difficult, but it's a very complicated program. Their secretary gives contractors lots of guidance in, I don't know, exactly similar situations, but the secretary had received questions as to how to deal with these transactions. And the secretary did issue guidance. The guidance document is not something that purports to be binding on the secretary. And I think the secretary's adjudications in, you know, this case and in Forsyth and Einstein, the Circuit, and Theocristi in the 10th, have adequately explained why the secretary adopted the interpretation set forth in the program memorandum. And the secretary repeats a lot of that analysis in this adjudication. So I don't really see how there could be an Alaska Hunters problem.
It's a little, there is justification in those cases and in the program memorandum, but to the extent that this is a challenge to the memorandum as arbitrary and capricious in interpreting the regulation, the general rationale in the program memorandum is that the other approaches aren't really suited to the nonprofit context, and in particular, the program memorandum says that the income valuation doesn't really work because they're not pursuing income in the same way. They're doing a lot of charity service. But oddly, the program memorandum, with respect to the market approach, simply says the market approach produces an estimate of value by comparing the entity being valued to sales of similar businesses, period, and then goes on to explain why they reject the income approach. Do we have somewhere anything that explains why the market approach, which is in fact the usual approach under the regulation, was not considered appropriate by the Secretary?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, of course, the first question you've got here, I mean, the appraisal methodology, or look at similar items, similar sales of similar hospitals or businesses. The question we've got here is whether sale actually occurred. So when the regulation says the primary approach, it means that you would get the value primarily from, I think, a bona fide sale itself, and, you know, where, and so I don't know that, anyway.
Or compare to similar sales in the market. I mean, there must be similar facilities around the country.
And there are. I think that the market approach in this particular appraisal actually is pretty consistent with the secretary, with the cost approach, the numbers are in. I think the market approach came out with $48 million, including $10 million of working capital. And the cost approach was 51 or something like that. It wouldn't make a difference in this case.
Yeah, that wasn't exactly my question.
Is
there any place that you can point to that gives the justification on the part of the secretary why the market approach was inappropriate in a nonprofit context.
Well, I think the market approach suffers from one of the same flaws that the Secretary talks about in terms of the income approach, which is that both of them give a value for the business entity as a whole, and what we're trying to do is come up with a value for the depreciable assets. Because if you use the market approach or the income approach, you could get a value that was arguably less than the value of the depreciable assets sold separately. And what we're really trying to do here is whether there was a bona fide sale of the depreciable assets, because that's what we can use to change a depreciation adjustment.
If you use cost, is there ever going to be a depreciation adjustment? Is this a matter of math?
The cost is a depreciated reproduction value. So there's depreciation built into the cost estimate.
Right.
So I don't know why they're – I think the answer is yes, they very well could be used in the cost approach, just not here.
Back to the pencil on that. I think it eliminates the adjustment program in this context.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, the Secretary does first.
Is there any instance where using the cost approach, the Secretary made an adjustment?
I don't know of a case where that fact pattern holds out, but I will say that, of course, we only get to, you know, district court litigation if the contractor denies a case in the first instance. And there are, you know, any number of cases. I think St. Luke's cites some board opinions, as does the Third Circuit's decision in Einstein, where the Secretary had allowed that transactions were bona fide sales after where the transaction, I think, were before between for-profit entities, where there'd been clearly the hospital had been shopped on the market and they'd gone to great lengths to assure the highest value were sold to the assets. And so, like, in that instance, presumably there was an appraisal done after the fact and there was a cost approach. And I don't know the specific details of those cases. But I don't think using a – I don't think the Secretary's rules, particularly focusing on the cost approach, would eliminate the recognition of a gain or loss after a sale.
Go back and paper and pencil on that.
I think that, as Your Honor mentioned, that using the income approach or market approach as set forth, those methodologies as set forth in the plaintiff's hospital's appraisal, does really lead you to the same result after you add back in cash and cash equivalents.
Do you have any theory for the treatment of the, it seems to be the same issue, page 282 of the Joint Appendix?
Honestly, if I could guess, I think it was supposed to say not including working capital, but that's a guess. I don't know. It seems it is completely inconsistent with the rest of the methodology in the appraisal, and I don't think it's arbitrary or it's completely reasonable for the Secretary not to want to use a number without any methodology backing it up. It can't be arbitrary for the Secretary not to rely on a number that just appears sort of out of nowhere. If there are no more questions.
Thank you.
Well, Your Honor, in response, first of all, the statement made that the appraisal was obtained after the fact is not true. In JA 95, the very bottom of the page, that is the purchase price allocation agreement, which was part of the merger agreement itself. And that clearly states that the figures therein were based on an appraisal which existed at the time of the merger and was used and relied upon by the parties in arriving at its allocation. And with respect to the cost method.
Sir, but my understanding is the appraisal we've all been looking at, there's a date 2 years after the transaction.
Well, Your Honor,
I'm not saying there wasn't any appraisal, but the appraisal that became the focal point is one done later, right?
Well, if you compare the numbers, Your Honor, at the draft appraisal, which was at page 95, with the numbers on the, which is part of the purchase price allegation,
allocation. With the allocation numbers at JA-283, they're almost identical. So the final appraisal came out with virtually identical numbers for purposes of appraising value to individual assets, as did the draft appraisal. And with respect, Your Honor, I think JA-283, it's worth noting that, in fact, the appraiser did use a cost methodology for purposes of assigning value to the individual assets of the hospital.
So 95, the draft appraisal on page 95 is based on the cost methodology?
Your Honor, I'm referring to the final appraisal. The final appraisal used here by the parties is at you can see it says at page, actually, JA-282. The auditor here specifically, appraiser here specifically states that he was using a cost methodology for purposes of assigning value to the individual assets. And on the second page of the appraisal itself, which is at JA-260, explicitly states that only the cost methodology can be used to allocate value to the individual assets. And that's exactly what he did for purposes of allocation. And I would emphasize to the court that nowhere did the Secretary have any objection to that method of allocation, because it did exactly use the cost approach, which the Secretary says should be used.
But did I take you correctly to be saying that the allocations on 95 are not done by the cost approach?
Those are also done by the cost approach, Your Honor, because the allocations at JA... JA 95 are based on the cost reproduction approach as well. The values there, the individual values on that, are also based on a cost approach.
And the gap, the reason they don't all add up to the ultimate cost figure upon which the Secretary relies is because they only did individual asset valuation for part of the assets.
Right. The appraiser used two separate methodologies, used a market approach to value the hospital as a whole, and then he used a cost approach for the purpose of assigning values to individual assets.
But not all the individual assets.
All the individual assets. And no further questions?
Thank you. Case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.